Hey Ador Shaney, Friday the 7th of March, Rabbi Akiva Tatz. Behind the Purim mask, reality and illusion.
So as to say something about Purim and relate to the Parsha as well. Vayikra, you know, the Aleph is written small. And the idea behind that is Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want himself to be present himself as the great Navi that Hashem is speaking to personally. So the solution was that the Aleph is written small, which is suggesting Mikre. Suggesting a Mikre, right? That means, if you could say such a thing, something in common with the way Hashem speaks to Bilam. As if to say, he's not speaking to me directly, but this is something that just happened. And you can have a sensitive ear. If you have a sensitive ear, you begin to hear Purim and Amalek. Right? Amalek is Asher Kolcha Baderech, which is the idea of happenstance, coincidence, that there was no planning in this, no direct Hashgacha. You might say that Moshe Rabbeinu is reflecting the good side of Mikra, in other words, the humility of taking himself out of the picture. And Amalek, of course, is taking Hashem completely out of the picture. And as we know, Amalek is Gematria Sophic. That means maybe he is, maybe he isn't, maybe he's in contact with the world, maybe he's no longer in contact with the world. That is the drawing down of the mask that Purim represents, where Hashem is no longer visible openly, he is hiding, and we can't see him. That is the, if you want a connection with the Parsha, maybe we could begin there. But let's think about the mask of Purim and the problem and tragedy of illusion, the fact that we live behind a mask, that we don't see reality. Perhaps the way to do it is to put Purim into historical context. Know that the unique feature of Purim, and shortly after Purim Chanukah, these are the so-called post-biblical, post-Tanakh festivals. Those of you who are well-versed in Kabbalah, as I'm sure you all are, you'll know that Purim and Chanukah are called the legs. They're called the legs. The form of the human. The human form ends with the Yesod, right? Midas Yesod, where birth is taking place, where a woman gives birth, where her body ends, the child begins. Her life ends, so to speak, a new life comes into the world. The legs are outside of that. The Arizal refers to the legs as Labar Migufe. The legs are outside the body. The Ari says when a woman's giving birth, her legs are cold. That means her life now becomes a new life. The legs are out of the picture. If you like, the child is the legs. That's why we say, Bra, Kara Da'avua, right? The son is a foot of his father. Or Uba Yerech Imo. Children are the legs of the parents. The meaning of that, of course, is that just like your legs are not part of you, but they take you to a new place, your children are also outside of you and take you to a new dimension, a new generation, a new space in time. And that's well known. That's called Netzach and Hoed. Purim is Netzach and Chanukah is Hoed. These are the two midas that are outside of the essence, outside of Torah, so to speak. The transition, Purim is the transition from Torah beyond, and Chanukah is completely beyond. Torah is the Yom Tov of Torah, Chanukah is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebaal Peh, as Rav Huttner puts it. That's a transition from Torah Shebiksav to Torah Shebaal Peh. What does this mean? If you put history into context, you look at the span of world history. So the Gemara says in Chelek, that the world as we know it will last for 6,000 years. So you make a map, right? This is the creation, and you stretch history over 6,000 years. We, of course, are right here. We are right at the end. We 5774, right? The Ramban says that every day of the Bria is corresponding to 1,000 years of subsequent history. So if Adam Rishon is created on the sixth day, we are now in the sixth millennium, and we are 5774. This is mamish late Erev Shabbos, Friday afternoon. You can smell the challen cooking. It's time to put on your Shabbos clothes, right? There's time to have been to mikvah already. This is our generation. We are very, very close. That's why we are called Ikfuzet HaMashiach. So we are the very, very end. We have the benefit and the beauty of hindsight, of seeing all the prophecies that were made, having come true in exquisite detail, except for the final post-history or pre-messianic events. But that's where we stand in history. And there are many ways you can break this up. The Gemara says the 6,000 are divided into two, two, and two. But one of the major insights here, watershed moments in Jewish history, is you go back from where we are 2,350 years, you get to Purim. And that was the greatest watershed event in history. Because what happened then was that what we call Gilui Ponim became Hester Ponim. Hashem revealing himself became a hashgacha that becomes hidden. Now, until then, Hashem revealed himself. We call that the phase of Torah Shebiksav. Hashem revealed himself in Nevuah and Nisim. The Rambam says that for every nes, you needed a Navi to be present. Yeah, in fact, the Rambam even uses the nes as a criterion for Nevuah. One of the criteria that a person could establish himself as a Navi is that he produces a nes of a certain kind. A nes nigle, which means that until that phase in history, Nisim were open. Hashem revealed himself openly, Nevi'im spoke, the two went hand in hand. We call that Gilui Ponim. At that time, there was no atheism. No one didn't believe. There was no such thing as a person who denied the existence of Hashem. Because you saw it openly, you went to the Beis HaMikdash, you saw 10 Nisim occurring constantly. That was a time of Gilui Ponim when Hashem revealed himself openly. And then he went into hiding. Purim Chanukah is the time, a 200-year period, during which Hashem stepped behind the mask, as it were, and since then we've seen nothing. We are deep in the era of Hester Ponim, where all we see is Nisim Nistarim. We don't see Hashem watching us openly. Categorically, by definition, there's no Nevuah, and Sheikh Nesson Sagdela closed Nevuah, the same time Nisim became extinct. We only see the hidden miracles now. We don't see revealed miracles, because we live in a generation of Hester Ponim. Rasim Chavasaman used to put it like this. It says that behold, this one stands behind our wall. This meaning the Shechina, stands behind the wall, meaning the Kesel, stands behind the wall. But it's Mashgiach min achalonos and Meitzitz min acharakim in Shir HaShirim, which is a song of Hashem's love for us. So Simcha used to say, what's the difference between Mashgiach min achalonos, when someone watches you through a window, and Meitzitz min acharakim, when he peeps at you through the cracks? He said there are times when Hashem watches us through the windows. That means times in history when he watches us and we see that he's watching us. A person watches you through the window, he sees you and you see him. When a person peers through the cracks, he sees you just as surely, but you don't see that he's watching you. Right? There are times in history when Hashem watches us through the windows, we see it and we enjoy it, we bask in that. And there are times in history like now when he watches us just as surely, but we don't see that he watches because he's peering through the cracks. He's still standing behind the wall, but the wall now hides him. And therefore, that is the time we move into that phase of history when we no longer see Hashem. By definition, before that phase in history, before Purim, there were Nisim Niglim, and now by definition we have only Nisim Nistarim. The difference between a Nes Nigle and a Nes Nista is that one breaks the law of nature. Adesla puts it like this. A Nes Nista, an incredible coincidence that you have to be extremely insensitive to deny, but it's not impossible. A Nes Nigle is something that breaks the law of nature. You know, if you go for a run, and you carelessly run off the edge of a cliff, and as you fall, you grab onto a twig that is growing out of the cliff face, and you hang there dangling over 5,000 feet of empty space. And as you hang there, the twig snaps. But it just so happens at the moment that it snaps that there's someone practicing throwing ropes over the edges of cliffs that day. And as he does, you grab the rope and he pulls you back. That would leave you pretty frum for at least 2 or 3 days. But the point is that if you're a very cynical skeptic, you would say, it's not impossible. It could happen. But if you go for a run and you carelessly run off the edge of a cliff, and you fall and you grab onto a twig and the twig snaps, and you levitate up and float back on, that would leave you frum for a week at least. The point is that is a nes nigle, because a law of nature has been broken. Although in essence there's no difference, but in our perception there's a difference. And therefore a nes nigle and a nes nis, and nisim nistorim, are the ones we experience where incredible coincidences happen, and all the great mashgichim used to point out that one should write a Megillah of one's life, where you tie together all the events that didn't seem miraculous in their own right, but as you put them together and you see the story emerge, you see out of the Nista comes a certain kind of Nigle. But before that phase in history, before Purim, there were Nisim Niglim, and the laws of nature were broken, and there the Nisim took the form of ocean splitting, and Jordan River splitting, and the dead being revived, and that we don't see anymore. For homework, and I'm sure you'd like some, I'm sure you came to think this morning, for homework, and for every correct answer, the Gabbaim are going to buy you a whiskey, cocaine, whatever you're into. For homework, you might like to think of the great, famous, and wonderful question asked by the Leshem. The Leshem says, if it's true that when we moved from Torah Shebiksav into Torah Shebaal Peh, and Hashem hid himself, and by definition, Nisim no longer can become revealed, how come the Gemara is full of Nisim Niglim? How come the Gemara, way after prophecy ended, after prophecy closed down, and no, by definition, no more Nisim Niglim, by definition. We have now a whole host, the Gemara, the Meiri says in one place, I think, that anyone mentioned in Gemara was capable of reviving the dead. And not only that, says the Leshem, but not only do we find this in Niglim in the Gemara, they become a dime a dozen. Right? A dime a dozen, the Tanaim, they revive the dead, they split rivers, one of the Tanaim split the river for himself, then he went back and split it for his Arab, you know. And listen, how is it possible? And the kasha on the Rambam is very clear kasha. If the Rambam says that a man producing a nes nigle, that qualifies him as being a Novi, how does that apply? Now that we have Nisim being a dime a dozen in a post-prophetic era, how can you claim that a Briton could prove himself to be a Novi, where clearly Tanoim and Amorim, who weren't Nevi'im, could do Nisim? Fantastic question, the long section on it in the Leshem. I'm not going to go into that now. But by definition, despite that question, we are in the generation of hidden miracles. And Purim is the time when that happens. You know, you see it so clearly. You see that prior to Purim, you have Torah Shebiksav, Hashem is speaking, he's dictating his Torah to Nevi'im, we see Nisim Niglim. And Purim is the transition. What happens at Purim? On the one hand, you have a Megillah, which is part of Tanakh. On the other hand, it's debatable whether it's Nevuah or Ruach HaKodesh. There's no other book in Tanakh where the Gemara debates, was this said by Nevuah, or was it not said with Nevuah? Was Esther Nevi'ah, or wasn't she? And the Gemara decides that there must have been Nevi'im, because it says, Vayomer Haman Beliboy. Nobody could say what a person said to himself, unless they're a Novi, the Megillah must be written with Nevuah, so it's included in Tanakh. But only by the skin of its teeth, so to speak. That means all the rest of Tanakh, there's no debate about whether this is part of Tanakh, whether people writing this on Nevi'im or not. Suddenly you get to the Megillah, it's debatable. Not only that, but unlike the rest of Tanakh, the Megillah doesn't mention Hashem's name. He's gone into hiding. There's now a remez, Hamelech, but doesn't say Hashem. Not only that, but Esther means the hidden one. She means Hester Ponim. Purim means the luck of the draw. You're talking about Amalek, you're talking about happenstance, coincidence, right? The destruction of the Jewish people, didn't draw lots because they needed to know the day on which to destroy the Jewish people. He drew lots because this had to be something that is luck and not Ashgocha. And therefore, it's not even a Hebrew word, it's a Persian word. And so wherever you touch the Megillah, some of Oshim say Megillah means Megillah rolled up and closed, is the same as Megaleh, which is revealing. But it's revealing from the fact in a completely different way than the events that have happened prior to this. Also the Nes of Purim. Of course it's a Nes. Rashi says Kabbalah Sat Torah happened then because of Avas Anes. But it's not a Nes like happened before. The other Nisim are Nisim Niglim. The Nes of Purim is the king couldn't sleep and Haman happened to walk in on the same night. And it's a series of natural events. And only when you roll them together do you see that a Ishkacha and a Hatzalah emerges. And therefore, it's completely unlike all the Tanakh that comes before. Purim is moving into the Hester, where there's a Nes, but it's a hidden Nes, and the Nevuah is hidden. And 150 years later, you have Hanukkah, where there's nothing at all. Nothing at all. There's no Megillah, there's not even a Mishnah. Hanukkah is completely in the era of darkness, where Hashem is completely distant and not seen at all. The Nes of Hanukkah is nothing like the Nisim that happened before. The Nes of Hanukkah is, first of all, a private Nes that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. Only the Kohanim saw it. It took place after the war was won. It had nothing to do with saving the Jewish people. Unlike all, the Rambam says, the Nisim that took place before were there to save the Jewish people. Right? He says it in Hilchas Yisrael Torah. But here, the Nes had nothing to do with the saving of the Jewish people. It happened after the war against the Greeks was won. If you like, it was a last wave goodbye from the world of Nisim. That was the last time we see anything revealed. After that, we move into the phase of darkness, and we see nothing. If you like, the miracle of Chanukah is more like the Nisim of the Gemara than the Nisim of Tanakh, right? Because there was no prophet present, and it was completely unlike the Nisim that happened before. That needs further thought, but that is the last time we saw anything revealed. And here we move into the phase of Torah Shebaal Peh. For the first time in history, a Gadol Hador has to make a decision, and he has no reference to Nevuah. Right? You know, it's an amazing thing. You think about it for a moment. This is not Hanukkah, of course, but just as a moment. Matisyahu is the leader of the Jewish people at that time, and he makes a decision. Right? And this is the first time the leader of a generation makes a decision that affects the Jewish people. He has no reference to the Urim V'Tumim, and he has no reference to Nevuah. So one day he gets up and he says, "Gentlemen, I've made a decision. Rabbi, what's your decision? We declare war on the Greek Empire." Rabbi, you and whose army? Well, there's me and my sons. You know, there's four or five of us. We've got a few old swords. The Greek Empire, you know, 10,000 war elephants. Yeah, I think we can do it. Rabbi, did you consult the Nevi'im? No, none of them. Did you ask the Urim V'Turim? No, we don't have them anymore. Rabbi, how do you know that this is the right decision? I feel that this is the right thing to do. You know, it wasn't a decision to plait the challahs a little different or smell different spices on Motzei Shabbos. You're talking about war in the Greek Empire on his own shoulders, right? And of course, the funny thing is that the Jewish people listened, and the really funny thing is that they won. But The point is that the first Torah Shebaal Peh decision, the first Das Torah decision, if you like, Mordechai of course made such a decision, but he was in contact with Nevuah. He was Mishare Knesset Hagdolah. Mordechai was part of the Anshei Knesset Hagdolah. In his generation lived Ezra, who was another member of the Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi was the last Navi. Malachi is Ezra, so you're talking about the very end of Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, where prophets were still present. So that is the historical, that's the historical picture. We're moving from Gilui into Hester, and we're moving from Revelation Atem Edai, you testify to my presence in the world, to Amalek, which is Gematria Safek, that maybe Hashem is here, maybe he isn't. That is the transition. And of course, if we trace it to its origin, as we always need to do when learning this type of, this facet of Torah, in fact, all of Torah, things need to be taken back to their Shurish. Where did this come from? Where can we put our finger on the point of origin? And of course, the problem arises in the beginning of history when man draws a mask over his own relationship with Hashem. Adam Arishon, he eats the fruit of the tree. And of course, the fruit of the tree is not the tree of evil. The tree is the tree of doubt and confusion, right? You know that it's called Eitz HaDaas Tov V'Ra. Daas means chibur, intimate chibur. Daas Tov V'Ra means good and bad become enmeshed with each other. You can no longer tell them apart. In Kabbalah, the tree is called Ilana Desfeka. Ilana Desfeka. It doesn't mean a tree of bad. When you eat the fruit of that tree, you don't become bad. You become confused. You can't see reality anymore. You see what happens? Adam Rishon speaks to Hashem. He sees reality as clearly as any human being could. And a moment later, he's hiding under the trees from the one who sees through the trees. Talk about confused. He's now hiding under the trees, having a moment before spoken to Hashem and know who Hashem is. And imagining that Hashem can no longer see through the trees. And of course, the ultimate tragedy is Hashem plays the game the way you do. So Hashem arrives in the garden and he says, you're behaving as if I can't see you. Ayeka, where are you? I can't see. Ayeka. And of course, that's Eicha. That's Eicha, where are you? And when man crawls out from under the trees and he says, here I am, Hashem says, Hamin I ate? Did you eat? I don't know. You tell me. And the Gemara says, Hamin is Haman. And that's where Amalek is born. In Hashem's doubt and Hashem's not knowing, when Hashem manifests in the world as if he doesn't know, where are you? I can't see you. Did you eat? You tell me. Haman comes into the world. The leader of the nation that stands for doubt when Hashem doesn't know. Where's Hashem? Maybe he's here, maybe he's not here. That is the gap that's introduced into the world. And that's the gap of the tree of knowledge where you no longer see clearly. And how did this begin? It says, Vateri Ha'isho. Vateri, you understand the power of illusion and fantasy. Vateri Ha'isho Kiteva Etz Lemachal. On this it says, Mephoshim said like this, the woman saw that the tree was good to eat. You can't see that a thing is good to eat. You can't see a taste. We're talking about introducing fantasy into the human condition. She looks at the tree, she sees it, and imagination takes over. Now, you know, the Gemara says that, very scary, the Gemara says when a sick person dies, when a sick person dies, he sees the Malach HaMavet standing over him, and he's all eyes. He's all eyes. Malach HaMavet is all eyes. And he holds in his hand a drawn sword, on the tip of which is a drop of poison. And as the person sees this apparition, he gasps and he flicks the poison into his mouth, and that's how the person dies. Come on, it's a long description of what happens. And again, for homework, you can think about why does he need a sword if he's not going to use it? A sword is not a tool you use for flicking poison. So why does the Gemara say he has a sword? A lot of things to think about. But why is he all eyes? And the answer is because Vateri Ha'isho was where the problem began. But the Zohar has a long section on this, is that he's all eyes. You don't need 100 eyes to see reality. You need only 2. But what needs to die now is all the illusory realities that were brought into being in your life. The person is ill and is facing reality now. He's about to transition into a world of reality. And what kills him is the illusion and fantasy that he lived, which is not real existence. And of course, that's what's now going to have to pay the price. And therefore, the agent of death is none other than the false visions, the eyes that saw a reality that never existed. And now the person is going to have to move into a dimension of existence from the one that did not. And you see this in so many ways. You know, the Yetzer is nothing other than the mask, that the mask of fantasy and illusion. The Gemara in Chelek, when Chelek says, woe to you, right? You people who have allowed yourselves to be pulled by the Yetzer. And the Gemara, the pasuk there that the Gemara quotes says, Moishchei Avoin, that means the people who you pull Avon onto yourself, with chevle shav, ubavoytes agola. You pull sin towards you with chevle shav, that means spider threads, nothing at all. And you pull the sin towards you with the cables, the thick cables that draw the carts. And the Gemara says, well, which is it? Are you attached to sin by spider threads that are nothing? Or are you attached to your Averis by the thick cables that draw the cart? So you must say the way it works is when it begins. When the Yetzer tempts you initially, it's flimsy as anything. Just the flick of a finger could dispel the temptation. But after you become addicted, after you've tasted it and it's got its claws into you, then you're bound by cables that are inescapable. You know, what's meant here is that when a person is first attracted to Avera, the first attraction is always no substance. Not, you think of a 13-year-old young fellow who's try his first cigarette. There's no craving for the cigarette. He can't possibly crave it. He hasn't tasted it. And then what he does, he takes a cigarette, and not only is there no craving for it, it makes him sick for a week. He smokes a cigarette, he's nauseous for hours, but somehow he gets through that, and a few years later, when he's smoking 50 a day, it's uncontrollable. What's happened is the initial attraction was no more than a mere illusion. All it was fantasy. There was no addiction, there was no physiological attraction, it was only a fantasy. It was only Vatariya Esha. And the fantasy built it up into the world that he imagined it would be. But as soon as that phase is passed, and then it has its claws, you know, Hashem wouldn't play unfair, wouldn't give you an addiction, and then ask you to climb out of it. He gives you the flimsiest of illusions, and you build it into, you thicken those spider threads into the cables that draw the carts that lock one in, right? You know, the Gemara in Sukkah, in the fifth parak in Sukkah, the Gemara says that the Yetzer is called a Tzvoini. Tzvoini, the hidden one. The hidden one. He has many names. He has seven names. One of his names is Esat Tzvoni Archik Me'alechem. When the Mashiach comes, the Tzvoni will be distanced from us. But right now, the Tzvoni is part of us. And one of the meanings of Tzvoni means the one that is Safun. It's hidden within you. The Yetzer is hidden. You can't see him. The Yetzer is hidden. When I saw that Gemara for the first time, I thought to myself, you know, this must be a misprint. What do you mean the Yetzer is hidden? I know exactly where my Yetzer is. He speaks to me. The moment I open my eyes in the morning, he speaks very clearly. He says to me, you know how cold it is out there, you know how tired you are, you know another hour's sleep. I mean, he speaks to me the whole day. You tzaddikim probably are completely out of touch with your Yetzer, but I certainly know where he is. So how can Chazal tell us that the Yetzer is hidden if you don't know where he is? He speaks as clearly as could be. So Rav Dessler explains, he's so hidden, you know, the most effective way to hide something is to put it in full view where nobody would think of looking. He says what's happened is that your consciousness is the Yetzer. So when you analyzing where your Yetzer is, what he's speaking to you, the one doing the thinking is him. The one doing this discussion of where the Yetzer is and whether he is or isn't, that's him. That's to put it this way. He said that when Adam Rishon began, he was his consciousness, his first person consciousness was only Avodas Hashem, was only Kedusha. All he had was a desire to connect with Hashem. And the Yetzer spoke at a distance in the second person. That was a nachash standing outside. Would you like to taste the Savera? But had no connection with him. It stood at a distance, addressing him in the second person. When he said, I, he meant only me and my Kedusha. And from a distance was a second person, Yetzer. After the Chet, when the Yetzer got inside, the first person becomes Chet. Now when you say I, you mean your childishness, your sensuality, your lower self. That is always the I. And if you're lucky, your conscience speaks. You know, if you're facing something delicious that you'd like to taste, especially when you shouldn't, which voice speaks? It's always the first person. I'd like to taste that. I'd like to taste that. And the Yetzer says, the conscience says, excuse me, no, you shouldn't. Very humiliating. The first person is always the Yetzer. And the second person, if you're lucky enough to hear him at all, is the conscience speaking from a distance in the second person. In other words, the I. No, Rav Moshe Shapiro once put it like this. He said, you've been hijacked by the Yetzer Hara. He said, what's the right way to rob a bank? I mean, you have to imagine him saying this, but what's the right way to rob a bank? You're walking with a motorcycle helmet and a gun. That's not a sensible way to rob a bank. The right way to rob a bank is you make an appointment with the manager, you walk into his office, you put a sock in his mouth, you tie him up, you lock him in the cupboard, and you sit at his desk and you run the bank. That's a sensible way to run a bank. That's what's been done to you by the Yetzer. He's taken over, and he's saying me. And he's debating the question of Kedusha, Tum, etc., but it's all him. The real I is locked in a cupboard someplace going, once in a while, Ne'ilah maybe. And that's the situation. And therefore the problem began with a reality that was clear, and then man crashed the world into a masked version of itself, where he stepped behind the mask, and he lives a world of fantasy and illusion. And of course major industries today on nothing but that. The whole media and the whole advertising industry, of course, they can't sell a potato today without putting a, whatever it is, close by. Right? Because they insult your intelligence, but they're appealing to the eyes that saw illusion and fantasized and built a world of unreality. And many people know that, of course, it's their thinking, illusory thinking, completely dysfunctional thinking, that keeps them in the world of illusion, bound by those cables, where a simple exercise of adjusting thought might be enough to correct a relationship or one's own relationship with oneself. That's the situation. And therefore, in summary, we move now. Purim is the time when we are exploring the idea of the master world. We move from the world of Torah Shebiksav, where Hashem revealed Himself openly, into the many centuries that we have been living through, which are the centuries of Hester Ponim, where the exercise we have is to learn to see through the mask. You know, just one positive statement maybe to leave ourselves with is that the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh is that Hashem no longer speaks to us openly. But that's the tragedy. The tragedy is we don't hear Him speaking. But the greatness of Torah Shebaal Peh is that we have the ability to do it ourselves. You know, the reconstruction we do, you know, the major exercise that we engage in terms of reconstructing reality is Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli means taking the broken shards of reality and reconstructing them. You know that Lashon Kodesh, which was Hashem speaking openly b'nevuah, that broke down in Bavel. Right? The Tower of Bavel, Eretz Shinar, was Bavel. Right? English word Babel. The Tower of Babel. Babel means where Hashem broke up the language. We no longer can hear it. Havanerdav and Navla Sham Svasam. Navla, that means let's go into Babel, let's put language into a Babel. And language broke down. From that time on, you could no longer hear Hashem. And one nation maintained that connection. There was Avraham Avinu and the Jewish people. And eventually, and by the way, that's why we were sent back to Babel. Chazal say we were sent back to Babel, like a woman being divorced and sent back to her father's house. That's where you came from with the voice of Nevuah. You've lost it, you go back there. And what did we do in Babel? We reestablish the connection through Talmud Bavli. And what is that? We no longer have the clear vision. We no longer have the truth. So we take the broken pieces of incorrectness, the broken pieces of the truth, the deceptive and mistaken shards of reality, and we reconstruct them. How does Talmud Bavli work? It takes wrong ideas and squeezes truth out of them. Talmud Bavli, not like Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi and Zohar, when they want to show you something, tachazi, come and see it. You just have to look. Bavli is Tashma, you have to assemble it yourself. Shma means to assemble. You take the broken shards, the broken pieces, take havamines that are all wrong, and out of the wrong pieces you reconstruct a truth. The first phase of history, you listen to the Navi speak, you see it clearly. The second phase, there's nothing to see anymore. You have to take the broken pieces, and you have to learn to squeeze correct perception, right, out of the broken shards of a reality that has disappeared. And therefore, Purim is the time for understanding this and for learning to read a Megillah and to write perhaps a Megillah of one's own life and to see how to put together the broken pieces to reassemble a clarity of vision.